Hello, and welcome to Mondays on Tuesdays podcast. Having a funny technical transcoding issue, and means I'm gonna cut it short and play the part of the recording yesterday that went well. If you're curious, just a little bit curious about it, what it sounded like yesterday, here's an interesting taste.
Hello, and welcome to Mondays on Tuesdays podcast. I'm going to talk about something I call the care economy.
And that's me saying that I'm going to talk about something I call the care economy. And I haven't recorded one of these in a while, and work has been consuming life, life is lifing. But what you have in front of you, I'll give a brief introduction and then, skip to the part of the recording that came out well, is my reflection and realization that I walked, anyway, I'll let the recording speak for itself. It's a bit sad, a lot reflective. And I think it's, how I find hopeful stuff. So without further ado, here's the recording from yesterday. What is good business? What is good training? What is good financial hygiene? And I think it's absolutely possible for people with bad financial hygiene to end up at the top of the economy. In fact, that's my prescription of what's wrong with the economy, is that when you have bad financial hygiene and you're an individual, you lose your own money. When you have bad financial hygiene and you preside over a company, you lose everyone else's money. Which means that the perception that wealthy people have good hygiene is not accurate when you consider the number of factors that people can position them into an advantageous place without actually managing the operations well. After the break, I'm going to talk about caring. So after all of my thinking about sort of my challenges and my successes and the things I value, I've boiled it down to the word care, because I think that taking care of things, the word care is actually in there, but basically when there's a problem and it's just kind of like, oh well, that problem will keep probleming and grow into something massive. It's actually a lack of taking the circumstances seriously and a lack of caring that allows things to fester. When it's like, no, this has got to be taken care of, then there's this incentive to listen to whoever can solve the issue and sort of, there's no like sacred shrine of the way things have been done in play at that time. It's just, we got to fix it. And I think moments like that are really magical and beautiful when it is simply, how do we do this? What are the practical steps? If we don't know, let's spend time investigating, invest time and money into improvement. And I think that's actually where innovation comes from, the recognition that there's an advantage to changing something. And then I think humans have the intelligence and ability to innovate as soon as they have reason to do so. I think that process is actually far more automatic than people realize. It's the setting the stage for innovation, and then humans love to innovate if you let them, and it just kind of happens. Before I go into my sort of grand theory of how caring is where wealth always comes from, I want to talk about my career, and I'm looking back on it and actually realizing that I believe I have been far more reckless than I thought I was being. And I think I was actually far more reckless far longer than I recognized. And I had a really lot of financial success during this period of being reckless. And I'll give you a few sort of quick statistics about my career, and then I'll give you the sort of interpretive side. So I've probably worked for like 50 or 60 different companies in my 25-year career. And the reason for that is that 30 or 40 of them were in the first few years, because I was an administrative temp worker sent to different offices every 3 weeks. And there's a chance the number of those offices is only like 15 or 16. It might be like 20, 25. I'm not sure. When I got to New York and realized that the activities I was doing to be a professional musician were not going to work out professionally, I ended up signing up with a temp agency to, you know, answer phones, file papers. At times I was actually like steaming clothes that had come to Giorgio Armani from a crate in Italy for a few days. I mean, there was all kinds of odds and end things that corporations needed to happen, and a number of them were over firing. This was about between like 2003 and 2006, I think, was the time period. Sometimes it was getting a bunch of papers in order because an auditor was coming and the papers were, you know, in the wrong filing cabinet, and it was a matter of organizing them. It was those kinds of activities. Or, you know, the accounts payable receipts had come in and they were just stacked up, you know, 3 feet high across an entire desk, and it was a matter of organizing them. Or manning the front desk and just accepting packages and greeting guests for the office because, you know, someone had gone on vacation and they didn't want to hire a new permanent person. All kinds of things. I loved it. I called it a corporate safari. It was just like, you know, in this office, in that office. And I tested really well on the Microsoft Office software. And one of the tests was PowerPoint. And I ended up doing PowerPoint presentations for Atlantic Records and Warner Music Group. And then I ended up using some of my Photoshop skills from my childhood of making, you know, 3D graphics and digital artwork and things like that. And so I was kind of drifting towards computers at this time anyway. And I got qualified enough to have like a full administrative job, administrative assistance job. And I decided I didn't really want to do that. So I started learning software from books and then telling everybody I knew how to do it. And I didn't really. And I accepted a few contracts that went very badly because I didn't really know what I was doing, but it was enough to speak the language, get into software companies, and finally, you know, get my first job for a few months. And then it was on my resume that I was a software engineer. And around that time in like 2009, 2010, it was kind of a very ripe up and coming industry. And so, you know, one job led to a next, and they got, you know, a little longer, a little more responsibility. And eventually, you know, I was making over $200,000 for, you know, an insurance company in Manhattan. And the reason I feel like I was reckless is because the pattern, I mean, that sounds like magic, right? Oh my God, this guy learned from books, he made all this money. But there's a really sinister side to what I was doing, which is that I didn't really value where I worked. I was kind of just like a curious tinkerer person who was happy to work on whatever I was given. And one of the interesting statistics is that I have always accepted the first offer letter I have received. I've never negotiated on salary, and I've never interviewed with multiple companies at a time. And the pattern was basically accept a job, very lightly interview them. I wasn't really, you know, that interested in red flags in the workplace. And then if I didn't like them, I would just call a bunch of recruiters and start the process over again. And just kind of start walking out of the office a few afternoons to have interviews and, you know, go somewhere else. And it means that I basically spent 20 years never really thinking deeply about where I wanted to work or how I wanted to work. And as a result, I'm now a 42-year-old person who doesn't really know what they want. I know a whole lot about what's wrong with the world. I have some of the best explanations amongst anyone that I know. And people always tell me, oh, wow, you're able to make sense of that. And, you know, I didn't know why that happened. And there's a kind of like a magic in that. But I am a grown-ass adult who does not know what they want. And I'm looking at this now kind of from a distance, like casting back. And you know, the software industry did downsize a lot, and a lot of jobs were lost. And when I moved back to the Midwest, I switched into restaurants, and that's how I now make a living. And I'm finding such a profound denial of sort of operational efficiencies that I can see from my background, because I don't have the title of operational consultant. I'm just someone who was unable to start a business. So, you know, hey, why listen to me? But I'm starting to feel like it's a combination of how I present myself, how I present my ideas, and how little time I spend actually researching and talking to companies and finding a company that I would like to work for and thinking about why I would like to work for them. Now, I'd like to offer a caveat here, which is in classical American exceptional fashion, I think a lot about personal productivity. And it is true that today the career opportunities are so stacked against almost everyone that you have to be a superstar just to survive and just to cut through the noise. But that does not mean that personal productivity is really where the magic is, or that any of us are to blame for how hard it is to find work. We have such a individualistic perspective. In you know, the country that I am from and live, which is the United States of America, we so badly ignore the circumstances. And what I'm saying here is that the most personal productivity thing for me to do is actually to ignore what I am necessarily capable of and start looking at the circumstance. Start looking at companies and what they do, start looking at sort of what's happening in the economy as a whole, and just imagine like doesn't necessarily matter what I can do. It's a matter of what I can plug into. What is greater than me that I can become a part of? And I think that's actually the most important part of my career that I did not care about. And I think that if I take my mindset and put it in a business owner, they're not going to be thinking about what the environment really needs from them, what the economy really needs from them. They're just going to be focused on what they already do and how they can do more of it. And so when their staff comes up to them and says, hey, you know, right next door to the product we offer is this other product, the space that that owner is in and the space that I have been my whole career is just one of taking what's right in front of me and moving on. And the reason I've called this episode the care economy is I think that my career stagnated at a certain point. I just became dissatisfied and bored. And then the industry wound down and, you know, I did, you know, lose all my money and there's hardship there. And I'm now starting to feel like there are things about my life that I did not care about. And I think one of the struggles that companies are having and one of the things that could in fact turn them around is caring more about more than just what's already happening within their company. Caring about what the world could actually use from them, what their staff is uniquely qualified to provide. And then I'll also talk about my experience of successful software companies is that generally speaking, the ones that were more successful had more of an interest in providing something of quality within the code base, not really squeezing the sort of juice out of what was already there. And it's hard exact I'm struggling to map this to caring because it was kind of a feeling in the room of we're interested in what our product means to the world, not necessarily like in love with the product we have. And then in restaurants, it's amazing how small things can have a big impact. If you don't have a menu that reuses the same ingredients, you end up losing all your cost. But more importantly than that, what makes a restaurant really, really fun to dine in is actually the organization of the service. It's when everyone gets their food at the same time, on time, and this customization, that customization was done for this person. And basically, like I'm at the point now where I think that restaurants basically are an organization as a service business because if customers were organized, they would buy groceries. And the real challenge in restaurants is making sure that large parties can get fresh food, freshly cooked food at the same time in the right order with all the right, you know, combinations of ingredients. Like, lots of people can cook. Not everybody can be organized on that time scale. And so the value of a restaurant and the value of a company comes down to a lot more of caring about the small things and caring enough to do the inconveniences and caring enough to constantly take a step back and question whether or not what you're doing is actually working, because you care about what's working rather than the sort of pride and confidence and convenience you have in doing something over and over again, whether or not it's the right thing to do. So I call this the care economy, because I think that wealth is created when people care and wealth is extracted when people don't. And I'm having this experience of looking back at my career and starting to identify the number of things I did on autopilot and kind of wondering if I can, you know, take a step back and reestablish, you know, what do I care about, and hopefully connect with other people who care about similar things and potentially get some of my expertise out into the world, which is something that I really, I would be happier, I would make more money, but also I'd love to kind of reconnect with people who use their, you know, intelligence, experience, and unique gifts also to fix things. And I think if enough people are able to do that, it really could, you know, pull us out of the sort of the slump we've been in for the last, like, sort of, you know, 30 to 50 years. And I think one of the things that I did witness happen was, I've talked about on a previous episode, where the big box stores came in and they came out on the highway, and then all of the stores around the town squares began closing because they couldn't compete with the prices. Restaurants, same thing, a bunch of fast food places came out by the highway. The challenge with that is that it was kind of a one-way ticket to a dead town, because the foot traffic in these, like, center of town square areas declined so much that if you're a small merchant, you don't actually have a space you can practically afford to rent to launch a company. And so, you know, when people talk about the sort of amount of, you know, corporate influence and special interest influence in America, I think there's a long history of not really realizing what we've been giving up on by allowing convenience to dictate, you know, more and more of our life. And I think it's because those small shops are, you know, they're really hard to run. And it was kind of like the 1-2 punch from the decline in the manufacturing industry that kind of started at the beginning of the 80s. And then you have the decline in small towns in the Midwest that was kind of like the middle of the 90s. And I don't think it's accidental that people are really struggling to find a way forward, because it's been so long since we had an example of, you know, a really transformative economy that was providing things on a detailed level. And growing up with that attitude, having watched that happen, I think my perspective on the working world was that it was never going to be satisfying. It was never going to be really worth doing. It was kind of like, this is just a place to, you know, learn as much as I can and then leave. I think growing up in the sort of shadow of the economic decline that I watched in the 90s set an attitude in me that actually made me expect that from work. I expected that work would not be a giving place and a rewarding place. And I'm now realizing that I may have taken the economic destruction I saw around me in my upbringing and very formative years to heart and not really put enough thought in how to get out of it, how to bring some unique creative product or idea to the world. You know, if I didn't like software and I was complaining about the politics of the companies, why was I so interested in walking across the street to find the exact same thing without really thinking, you know what, like, yeah, there's been economic destruction around me my whole life. You know, I went to New York for opportunity, and some of it was there, some of it was not. But I'm starting to feel like, how many opportunities have there been for me personally to set a different tone than I saw in America? And I actually think that's what it's going to take to bring America into a better place, is we have to start seeing a better world. And I don't know if I speak for myself in that I have looked at the American economy as just a complete shit show my entire, you know, 20, 25 some odd career. And I'm starting to regret that, because I think it influenced my behavior by having that outlook. But I don't think we're in crisis recently. I think we've been in crisis for a while, and I am looking at how to find a way out of that. And if anyone has ideas about how to, you know, build better and run companies better, you know, absolutely get in touch with me. You can find more information and what I'm about at firepro.com.